Big Foamy Head, show number 58, the Allagash Beer Show.
Beer Show. That was Blue Jazz we were listening to.
Mm-hmm. Local blues group on the rise.
Sound effect.
Ooh, good one.
Allagash White.
No weak cork pop from Allagash.
No, I think I learned last week how to do this correctly.
And did you hear that voice on the intro?
The restraining order has been lifted.
Welcome back, Susan.
Susan's been allowed out of the house.
We got all the paperwork straightened out.
Because Tom wears the pants in his family when Susan lets him, right?
And sometimes the skirts, too. It just depends on the mood.
Well, now you're sharing.
Did I say that out loud? Yeah, I'm sorry. I was just thinking those thoughts.
I hear the wassail talking, even though you only had a slug and said it smelled like about a dead squirrel. Or
No. It's just the initial fragrance was a little bit wet dog-ish to me.
Wet dog-ish.
Yeah.
Okay.
No, not dead squirrel. I wouldn't go that far.
I knew it was something to do with an animal. So we'll tell you about wassail in a minute, which was our warmer upper beer, and it was warm beer. But now we've got a good cold one, and what do you got here?
This is Allagash White. It's their interpretation of a Belgian wheat beer. Allagash White is unique and truly refreshing, brewed with a generous portion of wheat and our own special blend of spices. This beer is light and slightly cloudy in appearance with a spicy aroma. Overall, it is a beer that is very drinkable and smooth any time of the year.
And this is
It is cloudy. It has got a little pudding-like head, and it's spicy.
Alcohol by volume is 5%.
That's kind of pudding-like.
You use a spoon on that head.
87 on ratebeer.com.
Good and score. 5.5%. So this is the...
Not even 5.5%. 5.
5 on yours? Okay.
Yep.
So it's
oh, that's
it's
right. Ratebeer has it listed as 5.5.
It has it as a light, easy-to-drink beer. Drinkable and smooth any time of year.
It's Belgian wheat beer.
Belgian wheat beer.
Mm-hmm. That we all love.
Yeah, good stuff. Very good. I like this.
Does it need a little slice of something with it, like an orange?
A lot of people would be offended if you said that.
Oh, but, I didn't. I mean,
well, if it's a Belgian wit style, like a Blue Moon.
It reminded me a little bit of a Blue Moon. Is that a weird thing to say?
No,
because that's what they would be honored that you said that, because that's the style they were going after.
Well, of course, this is much better than a Blue Moon.
I agree.
I just had a Blue Moon for like $14 at Firebirds just the other night.
So yeah, that's what you get for buying a beer at a restaurant in Memphis or Collierville, anyway.
You like paying a lot for marginal beer.
It's because you're American.
Well, it was a lot better than like the $17 apple martini or whatever my friends were drinking.
Send them back and say, bring me something more expensive.
Yeah, they had something more expensive there. Some of our friends were all wrapped up in this little meeting, and when we walked by, they're all getting together. It was almost like a Mary Kay kind of thing that they were all excited about, and they were going to start selling this energy drink. I wish I knew the name. It's $95 a bottle. It's in
for
a wine bottle.
Drink?
It's in a wine bottle. You just drink 2 ounces in the morning. It lasts 2 weeks.
Well,
no, $45.
I believe if you got enough crack in there, that would get the price up. Yeah
so
it probably is cheaper than crack, actually.
I mean, it's only $10 a rock now, right?
It depends on where you go. You go the wrong side of town, and it's way
that's,
too
that's
much.
Third in Maine prices. Yeah, I'm quoting there. But so Rick, this is good stuff, and
it is. Allagash is out of Portland, Maine. They started brewing the summer of '95. That's when I sold the first batch. We have some rhythm going on there.
Somebody.
My heart's beating so fast.
Maybe is that what it is?
Yeah, maybe I'm so excited to see you guys.
Okay. Maybe your chillin's upstairs.
I don't know if that came through, but we all heard it.
Yeah, sure.
Okay.
15-barrel brew house.
It's a big outfit. They're a big little outfit.
But so you would not put a slice of orange with this, what you're saying?
No, I would.
Nah.
I would, but a lot of people would say,
I wouldn't. I like it just like it is.
You're screwing up your beer.
I like it just like it is.
Now, what's the point of putting the orange with it, or the lemon, or the whatever?
Tastes good.
Yeah.
Just to...
That's it.
It really accentuates
the... Do you squeeze it in there?
Yeah.
Yeah, because wheat is a fruity sort of taste anyway. And the wit with the spices, and throw a lime, or lemon, or an orange slice in there.
Any kind of citrus? Good. Could you do a lime?
I don't... I've only seen lemons, but I don't see why not.
Lemons and oranges.
Lemons and oranges, yeah. Hmm. Oh, excuse me.
Well, Susan, you can do anything your little heart desires.
Okay, but bananas, we draw the line at bananas.
Yeah.
You cannot float a banana in a beer. It's just bad form.
This particular bottle is batch 32, and they give you directions on how to pour it.
Is this a roll of bottle?
This is where you roll it, so that's what I was doing.
Is it roll your own bottle? Did you roll it?
Yes, I did.
All right.
To get the yeast to...
All right.
Now, where did you have to buy this?
I bought this in Asheville, North Carolina.
At a liquor store?
Yeah, they have a really good liquor store there. It's like a Whole Earth or Whole Food place, you know? It's a hippie hangout.
Yeah.
But they have fantastic beer selection.
I mean, this is one that... Well, yes, they could. They could sell this here in our town if we could get it. But this is the only one of the Allagash line that we're having tonight that they could sell.
Because of the 5%.
Because of 5%.
Well, we'd go to the liquor store and get others.
Yeah. So what else we got going on? How's the beer coming along, the homebrews?
I tried my What am I brewing?
It's not the Borp.
No, it's a
the hazelnut
nectar today. In
round 3.
God-awful sweet. This might be a batch I have to toss.
No, wait, well, you mean it's too sweet?
Yeah, I threw way too much hazelnut flavor.
Okay, well, you know what? I started to make this. I thought, and I started to call you. It's like, this, we should just, like, cook some of this down, put it on ice cream, make brownies, make frosting out of it.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so if it comes out too sweet, we're gonna do stuff with it.
Some wassail stuff with it.
I
some
bet
kind
you
of hot
could.
Drink.
Yeah, heat it up. Hot hazelnut neck.
We could give it to you and Jamie and see if it's a chick beer.
Yeah.
It might be a chick.
And float a lemon or a banana.
Or a scoop of ice cream. Because beer and ice cream does not happen very often.
Now, well, with this hazelnut, you can. You get beer floats, right?
Ooh, good now you're talking.
Okay, so we'll have to see. So you sample it and you think it too sweet?
Yeah, it's only been in the bottle for about 4 or 5 days, though.
But
it's already developing a little bit of carbonation. It was doing okay, but it hasn't completely fermented out, so.
And you were going to get on your soapbox.
I have a rant. Starzan is what I'm going to rant about. It's a product from
the Brewing Network.
Five Star Chemical Company. And I was listening to the Brewing Network.
Yeah.
Oops, I'm waving my pen around. I'm already getting excited. And they were...
that happens all the time, doesn't it?
They were swearing up and down that this is the greatest product since sliced bread. I've been using it for the last 2 batches. This is some foamy cleanser.
So this
it's
is
actually
to,
a sanitizer.
It's to sanitize your glass.
Yeah, carboys. All your equipment. I put in a carboy though, and I got to rinse it like for half an hour to get the freaking suds out. So
this isn't one that you ignore the suds. It's okay.
You can ignore the suds, and they are edible and all that good stuff.
But
I won't because I don't want it.
Yeah, because it's got bubbles, and it looks like soap.
I am having a hard time recommending this to other people. As a matter of fact, I would say stay away from it.
It's an edible cleanser? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, it's a sanitizer. It lowers the pH to like 3 or below. So.
Because who doesn't like to enjoy a nice beverage of phosphoric acid and dodecyl benzene sulfonic acid?
Exactly.
With ice cream.
Oh. That makes it good. Yeah.
Could you use it to wash other things?
Yeah, there are several things that they
hair.
I guess do it for the dairy industry. Well, what I'm thinking you could use it for, if you like to make homemade bug spray.
No.
It would be a perfect,
who doesn't?
It'd be a perfect surfactant for that. A lot of people like their homeopathic.
Okay,
bug
we're going into our knowledge section, right?
Of
surfactants,
because I knew Dick would be interested in what a surfactant is.
All right, wait a minute. Let me get my pencil. Okay, go ahead.
It's a contraction of surface active agent. So,
well, yeah. Of course.
He said contractions.
Contraction. That's right. Without apostrophes. So we could actually go well in depth into what different surfactants are.
Okay, so the summation is...
Starzan would be a good surfactant. So.
And you didn't read the technical lingo here. This stuff sucks ass. Okay.
Yeah, well, that would be my opinion.
That's your opinion, and...
they do have another product, which apparently is less foaming, called Sani Clean. I will give that a shot.
Maybe you should have gone
otherwise,
with the
I'm going
six
back
star.
To Iodofer.
Yeah, which I had some somewhere.
Oh, yeah, everybody has Iodofer. But I've heard that it leaves a taste. So
I don't know. You know, this is where I think you get, at some point, you get to where you're so sensitive, your beer palate. But wassail will take care of that.
We're much more desensitized
wassail.
Now.
And we're drinking wassail.
What is wassail?
Okay, let me tell you about wassail.
Do we have time in this segment?
Yeah, we got a minute. Wassail is the Christmas beverage that's been around for many hundreds of years. I think it's more popular up north. I've never heard of it until I got a little older. I've never had it until tonight. So I watched a program.
So tonight's was the best wassail you've ever had.
Yes, it is.
Same
as a matter
here.
Of fact.
Ditto.
But what it is it's an older, from like the 12th and 13th century beverage made with assorted beers. Some people do wine, some people do cider, but the old recipes call for nut brown ale and stouts. To that you add cinnamon, nutmeg, some cloves, and the recipes vary wildly because the beer, they had the beer, right? They made their own beer, so they got a pot of beer, and they'd start boiling heating it. It's mulled beer, so you don't ever bring it to a boil. And people would come by, and they would throw little bits of their spices. Spices were very expensive. So, you know, a little pinch here, a little pinch there. And they'd throw it into this communal pot. And then at the same time, this was something they did around the end of the apple growing season. They would take baked apples, drop that in there. And in this recipe, it called for some lemons too, which gives it a little twang. And I mixed all that up and let it mull for a couple of hours. And then I added to it a large bottle of cream sherry and half a flask of brandy. So we got us some alcoholic punch here. And the last thing was eggs to thicken it up a little bit.
Who would have thunk that?
Well, it's
to give it body. You get your own little nail soup going on here, you know? You know that parable?
Now, it's like that. It is like that. Or the other ingredient that I just couldn't stand the idea of is you're supposed to get old bread.
Oh, God.
That you float on it. And you drink your wassail, and then you eat your, bread. That is where the origin of toast comes from. Not the product, but to give a toast is to float the bread on the wassail bowl. So that's where that comes from.
So wassail is always this, because I thought wassail was also like a hot, like wine that you put on top of the stove. And
that's
then put
where,
some,
yeah, and it evolved just, to where okay. Whatever you had, cheap wine, stuff like that, because beer was much more plentiful in the poorer folk. And So the way that you traditionally serve it is you pour it into a wassail bowl and you pass this big honking bowl around. Everybody drinks out of the thing.
And you could not stand that, could you?
No, I use cups.
This guy is a germophobic, really. You don't want to share a cup with me or anything.
Well, I'm out of Star Sand. Otherwise, I'd rinse me a bowl.
I can bring over mine. I'm not using it. Okay. Yes.
So anyway, that was it. And I think it came out pretty well because we kept passing mugs of it around. Trey had to leave, but he knocked back a few mugs and I have nothing but a wet cinnamon stick left in mine. And
see, I didn't get the stick. Maybe that's why I had that might have been my problem.
It's right there in front of you. You're supposed to garnish it with
the
cinnamon stick.
Tell me about the garnish.
I can't tell you everything.
Our show notes are fairly interesting. It says, in Northern Europe, winter festivities were once considered to be a feast of the dead, complete with ceremonies full of spirits, devils, and the haunting presence of the Norse god Odin and his night riders. One particularly durable solstice festival was Jol, also known as Yule, and pronounced Yule. A feast, it's spelled J-U-L-E, a feast celebrated throughout Northern Europe, and particularly in Scandinavia, in honor of Jolnir, another name for Odin. Since Odin was the god of intoxicating drink and ecstasy, I like Odin.
Odin rules.
Odin's...
And was what else was he god of?
As well as the god of death.
Yeah.
Yule customs varied greatly from region to region. So
that's just like Christmas used to scare the hell out of everybody. Odin and his night riders, drunk off their ass, come down.
The feast of the dead.
The feast of the dead. So the other little note on this is Here We Come A-Wassailing, a song loved by many but understood by few.
Sing us a few bars.
Come A-Wassailing. The end. and repeat. And it's apparently changed by many to Here We Come A-Caroling because it's thought to be the act of singing when actually it's the act of begging for more liquor to put in the wassail bowl.
We should do that sometimes in the neighborhood.
Yeah, it is.
That would be good times.
Okay. So there you go. That's the wassail summary.
We could have little statues of Odin in our front yard if we're participating.
Yeah, who's going to be in.
All right. So we have got a couple of songs. We got one more coming from Blue Jazz, but I'm going to take a departure because I was looking for blues guys who aren't dead, which
always a challenge.
And I was also looking for songwriters and stuff. And so here's the song. This is technically a blues song. It does the repeat of the verses, then a chorus. Everybody knows it. So being here in the South, we're going to play you some Skinner.
Home in the green, I keep blowing down the road.
That was Lynyrd Skynyrd, a song written by J.J. Cale.
Don't you have to yell that?
Blythe Skynyrd! Freebird!
Call Me the Breeze. All right, we're on to our second Allagash beer, the Double Reserve.
Ooh. Another healthy pop.
So did I already ask this? Is Allagash the name of the brewing?
The brewery, yes.
Brewery
is Allagash. And pouring.
These are all Belgian styles. A double. Mm-hmm. Dubel is a double or a Belgian style.
And they are they considered a contemporary of the Omegang? Because they're both northeastern.
That's a big old word there, Dick.
Thank you.
Are they a contemporary of them?
They both go after the same styles. They're Belgian focused.
Well, if that's what you mean. Northeastern. By yes, they are contemporaries.
They're technically a competitor. I believe it's coopetition.
This would be batch 54.
Okay. Ooh. And this is a double, but you were saying Dubel. Is there a right way to
say it? Very fancy.
We would need a Belgian person to tell
potato,
us.
Potato.
That's some bubbles coming off the bottom.
That's the effervescence.
It's very effervescent.
These are all bottle conditioned.
Yeah.
This one you did not roll, so the yeast is left on the bottom of the bottle.
This looks like a dark mahogany color with ruby hues to me.
It's got a complex malty taste.
Does it?
Yeah.
And Susan, do you find the finish is dry with subtle hints of chocolate and nuts?
Yes.
I think with time, Allagash Double will mature in the bottle and acquire distinctive port and sherry characteristics.
I believe you are correct, sir.
So we get
alcohol by
chocolate?
Volume, 7%.
Mm-hmm. And I would definitely recommend cellaring this at 55. Serve at 50 to 60
degrees.
Don't you think 57 is really...
57 is a good middle range to serve this
at. I mean, you don't want to do it too cold.
And I noticed something, though, a serving note on the white. Earlier it said, it has it here too. Serve in a Trappist glass.
Just like we have.
Yeah, except I call it, this is a pint glass. Yeah.
What does that mean? Does that have to do with the monks?
Well, the glasses, and the Belgians get all freaky about it because they make their own glasses in order, theoretically, to focus the aroma.
Duval has a nice goblet-shaped glass.
They do, and I like their glass. I think it's an all-around good... actually, what you were swilling your wassail down was kind of our sort of glass. That's the closest we can get. Wassail is just an ugly-looking drink once it cools off.
Yeah.
It ain't pretty.
I'm holding up my
empty-ish glass of wet dog-smelling... Funky.
I thought
residue.
You got the cool stuff.
Speaking
it
smelled, of dogs,
it smelled good.
Speaking of animals,
how about them dogs?
How about the animals?
There's animals in the news, and I want to tell you about a liquid one first.
A liquid animal.
A liquid animal. Yeah, this was our Anheuser-Busch friends have been doing things under the covers, and they. Go figure. But they have been in states that there are breweries making good beer. I know it's hard to believe.
What?
Okay, we were darting one way and Dick's dragging us back.
Yes,
in
I am. I'm reeling you back in.
What's going on?
I'm going to explain the liquid animal here. So what they did is they brew. They let their brewers at the breweries come up with unique beers and put them out there, and the state votes on what beer they like. So. Our nearest state with an Anheuser-Busch brewery is Missouri. Well, they voted on their state beer.
That's where they're from.
Where they are from, yes. And they voted on their state beer, and the winner is, here it is, Mule Kick Stout.
Oatmeal Stout. Yeah,
a liquid animal.
There you go. All right, he brought it in.
Now, why is it called that? Why Mule Kick?
Because it's a medium-bodied oatmeal stout with flavor notes of caramel and chocolate and a double-heeled kick of roasted coffee and oatmeal.
But why mule? There's not, like, some secret ingredient in there or anything.
There's a tiny piece of mule in every glass.
It's it's a true salute to Missouri's official mascot. The mule.
The mule.
Yeah.
You know, stubborn as a Missouri mule.
No, I've never heard that.
But
5.9% alcohol by wine.
5%, yeah. Pretty good stuff. And so I've heard about this, and I hope in my journeys to St. Louis next week, maybe I can lay my hands on something different. They are really going, Budweiser, Anheuser-Busch, they're going after this market. I looked on their website, I did a little research, and... this isn't all of it. There's a lot more.
Being a famous media person, you ought to be able to get some contacts.
You'd think they'd send a limo to pick me up. And
so an oatmeal beer. It's good breakfast.
Well, the oatmeal stout, yeah, it's good for you. Got fiber.
Yes.
Good. But Rick makes the oatmeal beers.
I do.
It makes a nice, it gives it a body.
Actually, I've added oatmeal to a whipped beer. Yeah, it gives a nice smooth mouthfeel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's good stuff. So there's other animals. We got a sad note.
Sad note.
Yeah. And
I didn't know about those toys. Just
and our right. friends at D-Night, Clark, he's going to be real upset because he asked us.
Yeah.
What's the latest on the manatee? Well, it was reported earlier last week that the manatee has been found. He passed away. He eluded capture from the evil henchman from SeaWorld.
That would have saved his life.
So manatees not known for being brain surgeons.
But when you're in a self-destructive spiral like that.
Yeah, he was in a downward spiral, hanging out with the wrong fish. It was just going nowhere
going
fast.
The wrong way altogether.
I believe, I didn't quite catch this, but I think he had some gang ink on him.
Yeah, I could just have been drinking wrong. And you know.
But he surfaced. His body was found in McKellar Lake Park, which it feeds into off of the Mississippi into downtown Memphis.
We don't get a lot of manatees in McKellar Lake.
Well, counting that one, that would make one.
Yeah, so, it's kind of a lonely place for a manatee.
But I was really thinking, oh God, this is really bad because you know what we did get? Alligators. Or crocodiles. I forget which one. But they are turning up now. So I thought, oh, God, this is like nature gone.
Yeah, see, everybody hears about how wonderful Memphis is, and everybody wants to come live here.
Yeah, of course they do. And well, that, and except they're all afraid that our mayor will whip their ass or challenge them to a fight.
Yeah.
So the manatee passed away, and we were sad to hear that. But that's going to happen, you know. And on a lighter note...
Yeah. Susan, you have a story for us.
I sure do. This is out of Dublin, Ireland. A camel at an Irish riding school's Christmas show halted festivities when he gorged on the feast intended for the human guests. Gus, an 11-year-old camel originally from Morocco, devoured 200 mince pies and several cans of Guinness while the staff was getting changed for Santa's Magical Animal Kingdom show. Reuters reports that Robert Fagan, owner of Mullingar Equestrian Center in Central Ireland, said Gus found his way out of his pen and helped himself. Although Gus ruined the party, Fagan didn't seem to hold a grudge and was happy to report the camel's overindulgence did not make him ill. We were all looking forward to it, but you really can't blame him. He's a very gentle, docile sort of camel.
So he's eating pie.
Except he's a pie-eating, beer-drinking...
beer-guzzling camel.
But I'm concerned...
I'd hate to be around that camel in about 2 hours.
Now hopefully we picked up the recorder in the background playing a little Christmas tune.
That's right. We did have a little Christmas narration.
We had Dick's children...
stomping at our head and playing
for Susan's story.
But I'm concerned about his ratio. 200 mince pies and several... So that means a couple cans of Guinness.
You should have had more beer.
That's what I'm worried about.
What if it gave him gas?
That's a lot of pie and not much liquid, I would say.
Well, the last animal note.
The flatulence.
And this concerned you, being the green earth tree-hugging person that you are.
Well, certainly, go see Al Gore's movie and you're all concerned about how evil humans are destroying the world.
Right. We're producing all these toxic gases.
Yeah, well, guess what? It's the stupid cattle we're breeding.
Yeah, it's not us.
They're farting methane gas, and they're building up the greenhouse gases.
And so, wasn't this a study was done to measure it, and that, as it turns out, that the most destructive...
is not human beings, their power plants, or their cars, or anything.
It's
the cows farting.
And cow farts. So
I have to admit, I contribute to that methane gas problem.
You have a cow?
You have fetch
fart.
Oh, okay.
Very nice.
Well, you need to eat more meat. That's the only answer. These cows must be stopped. Everyone needs to increase their meat intake by 50%.
We must kill cows and eat them.
That's right. Eat them.
To save the world.
It's up to you. It's your civic responsibility to eat more steak. Too bad they don't taste like bacon. But the pigs are, I think we should eat them as well, just in case.
Right. Well, you got to have a balanced diet.
That's right.
Balanced beef and pork.
We could probably keep going with animal stories all night, but instead, here's Rick Like with some real beer news.
Hey, Dick, how you doing?
Doing great.
Hey, pretty soon there's going to be no more Busch in NASCAR. Since 1984, NASCAR's Grand National Series, basically the AAA level of stock car racing, has been sponsored by Busch Beer. That's all going to end at the end of the 2007 season next fall. Anheuser-Busch announced that it decided not to renew this title sponsorship. NASCAR faced a similar challenge a few years ago when cigarette maker R.J. Reynolds dropped the Winston sponsorship of the top-level series. Now it's going to have to go out and find a replacement for Busch Beer. Sports marketers predict that the annual price tag for sponsoring the series could run as high as $30 to $40 million.
Man.
And that's all because NASCAR fans are recognized as some of the most loyal fans in sports.
Why are they dropping? Did they give any reason?
Well, I think, you know, Anheuser-Busch is involved in a lot of sports. They're broadening their sports sponsorships out to include a lot of things. They spent an incredible amount of money this past year on the World Cup. And I think also, from my sources, I've been told that Anheuser-Busch wasn't spending anywhere close to the $30 to $40 million that it's likely to fetch on the renewal of the contract. So they might have been facing a pretty big price increase there and just decided, you know, we're going to try something else different for a while.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, NASCAR and beer, that goes together. But I guess if, the market gets a little too pricey, they're going to have to pull out.
Well, you know, and they're not abandoning the series altogether. They're still going to be on Dale Earnhardt Jr.'s car with the Budweiser brand.
Yeah.
And they'll be around the series. They're not going to walk away from that fan base.
Great.
You know, and as I'm traveling around, do you ever wonder what people are really drinking? During my travels, I'm reminded that for every great beer bar that you find, there's probably three or four dozen where they're serving nothing more than, you know, a few pale domestic lagers, a couple of light beers, and maybe token import.
Yeah.
You know, we've all been there.
Oh, man.
Beer Marketers Insights is a trade magazine that watches the industry, and they've just reported that craft beer makes up about 3.5% of the 205.6 million barrels of the U.S. domestic beer market. So what's the rest of the 96.5% made up of? Well, Anheuser-Busch, for one, they're selling 48.5% of that beer. SAB Miller domestic brands hold 18.3%, and Molson Coors domestics make up about another 11%. Imported beers are 12.5%, and then the rest of the regional brewers weigh in at 6.4%.
It's not a lot for regional.
No, it's not. I mean, if you look at that regional category and kind of lump it together with the craft brewers out there, you know, you're talking just about 10% of the market. So imports are actually larger than that. And, you know, Anheuser-Busch is about five times that number.
Yeah. Well, so what is this telling us from a trend?
Well, I think from a trend standpoint, we keep hearing that the craft beer category is growing by 8 or 9% a year, and that sounds great on the surface, but the base is so small that the reality is that it's a small part of the market and really doesn't carry a lot of weight with a lot of retailers. So when consumers wonder, you know, why don't they stock my favorite beer, or why don't they stock more brands, you know, in the craft category, that's why. Hey, Dick, do we got time for one more item?
Sure.
Great. You know, the Czech Republic is known for the fact that it has the largest per capita beer consumption of any country. But if you look at figures that the Czech Beer and Malt Association just released, their domestic consumption is flat. The association says that it's really tourists that are keeping that market as healthy as it is. They say that tourists drink about 12.5% of the beer consumed in the Czech Republic. And the other thing that's helping them is that there's growth in export sales. Germany, Slovakia, some other European Union countries in the United States are fueling some growth in the market. Otherwise, the old Czech Republic would be seeing sales decline, actually.
Yeah, Rick was mentioning the same thing was occurring in Belgium as well, although within the country, sales are declining or flatlining a little bit. exports are going good. This is a little different twist on it that the tourists are drinking up the beer, but I guess that's good.
Yeah, and one of the things that these that the brewers in these countries, I think, have to worry about, the strength of the euro and the decline of the dollar, if they're counting on export sales to the United States, as those products get more expensive because of the exchange rate, they're going to start to lose some of those sales.
Well, Rick, I guess the inflation rate's going to go up, down, dollars, euros, everything, and you know, beer prices will rise and fall accordingly.
Yeah, that's the business side of beer.
Yeah, that's it. Well, Rick, thanks. Listen, I really appreciate you bringing us the latest.
Hey, we'll talk to you next week, Dick.
Okay, thanks, Rick.
All right. Well, but we've got one more little bit before we get to our next beer. This is an interview with the band that we opened the show with, Blue Jazz, and they're a good example of a local band that has been together for quite a long time, longer than many other successful bands, and their whole focus is just on making music. They're playing around town here and there, basically when they feel like it. So give a listen to Blue Jazz. All right, so tell me a little bit about the influences that you guys have.
Mark's got the Eric Clapton, Jimmy Page. You know, Randy, you know, what's some of your drummers?
Compressive. I can't even say it. The drummer that's got a compressive feel. What is the word?
Cut.
Progressive.
Well, you know, I'm thinking that a lot of our influences come from, there's five people in the band. Everybody has really diverse influences, and when we come together, that's what comes out. You know, that's why it doesn't sound like exactly like this or exactly like that, because there's five different people contributing different things to this.
And the chemistry is there, is why that works. A lot of times that won't work in some bands. You know, everybody playing something different, but for some reason, this, you know, I don't know if it's that we've known each other so long. We, you know, we're good friends as well as bandmates. That it really, you know, the chemistry's there. That's a big thing about us, because it's like, you know, just get together on Sundays, fire the grill up, you know, play some stuff on acoustic, has just, you know, developed over the years.
So tell me how the band got started.
How the band got started. Mark and I met at a mutual friend's house while they were playing music over at my friend Dewey's house. And he was over there with lead singer of Breaking Point, Brett, and a drummer that has since died, and Mark. And I came over there and hung out, played some music, and Mark and I met and started playing harmonica. I mean, harmonica and guitar. I'd come over, and I'd play hand drums as well. I got to play some hand drums, and we would just get in these jam circles, you know, either at my place or his place, and, you know, eventually we got a little four-track, started recording the nights, and it was more like just, it was more like an audio album. All the music that we have is like, we got like 13 CDs worth of just stuff that we've played throughout these, you know, since 94. We got together in 94.
Wow, well, that's a pretty long time for any band. Now, you told me that y'all have played at King Biscuit.
Yeah.
And how did that come about?
I sent a CD, basically the CD, some of the songs you have on the CD I gave you, sent those down. Actually, I think it was just a three-song demo, and I designed a little package for it, sent it down there, and, you know, they choose out like thousands of CDs each year of up-and-coming artists that are unsigned that, you know, they can get to play the festival, and our CD made it through all the judges, and they called it up and asked us to come down and play.
And we got to play with quite a few other bands that were very respected.
Yeah.
And good bands from around the country.
Yeah. Blues all over the place.
So you've done King Biscuit. You've got this, it's sort of an album or CD now. Got your website going. What do you see next?
Just really, I you know, I was in school the past 2 years, so I'm kind of putting Blue Jazz back on the front burner, and I'm going to push us around town a little more, get to play in some gigs like maybe once or twice a month, and, you know, just, you know, get back out there in front of people and have a good time, you know, and share the music. And hopefully maybe one day we'll get into a legitimate studio.
Yeah, a nice studio.
And a real nice studio, and maybe cut an album on some of these songs. And, you know, just
these songs were definitely cut that you heard on some very jacked up digital boards.
Really?
Well, I like it. I mean, I think that kind of adds to it myself.
Yeah, this is one of the most high-tech bands I've been in.
Microphones and everything, huh?
Bring up some boards and hard drives and all that stuff.
Shay, the songs that I've listened to, they all sound great, and I was having trouble picking one. We let off the show with Down Lord, and I want you to pick one more for us to play.
Yeah, if you want something rocking, though, Barrel House.
Okay. Yeah, Barrel House is pretty rocking.
Like that song, huh?
All right, that's what we're going to play. And if somebody out there listening, and we have got local listeners, want to catch you, this will probably be after Christmas, so we know we're going to miss you at Neil's. You got any dates lined up in late December, January?
As of right now, we don't have anything set up.
So just
like to, you know, not play so much in the cold months, man. Loading that equipment in and out of the car, man. The sub-zero temperatures kind of suck.
You're a milder temperatures man.
Milder temperatures. A little exaggerated. We're in the South, I know.
So no, we're not going to find you playing on a street corner in January, are we?
That's
all right. Well, and we're gonna come over there and distribute some beers and see if we can do a little live action with you sometime soon.
That'd be
all
fun.
All right.
Gotta do it pretty soon, man. Bass player just had him a child, so the jam room is about to turn into a crib.
Okay. That's the hazards of parenthood, isn't it?
Okay, that's another reason why I haven't really booked any shows.
All right. Well, listen, I appreciate you taking time away from your practice.
All right.
All right. We'll talk to you later.
Thanks a lot.
All right. Bye-bye.
Working all night and she's working all day. Do what she's got to get her heart on pay. Whether it's right or wrong or whether it's okay. I didn't write this song, now it's not for me to say. Tracking all night and I'm sweating all day. Always tugging at my looking for someone to play. Round he comes, just a looky here. Down and your eyes said low. Turn that dial down on your radio. Ringing in your ears, your thoughts ain't very clear. Your barrel out all night long. Need you still there?
Susan has left the building.
Yep, it's nice to have her drop by, and it's been a little while. I'm sure she'll be back again.
We hope you guys enjoyed the interview and the music.
Mm-hmm. And now we can talk about stuff we'd be too embarrassed to say in front of her. Big news.
Being good Southern gentlemen that we are.
That's right. We got some big news.
If you guys go back to our shows, mm-hmm. we did a show called the North Mississippi All-Stars, or I forget what the name of the show was, but
the featured music was North Mississippi All-Stars.
We had just gone to a concert and were awed and wowed and, you know, mm-hmm. just thrilled to death with the concert that we saw. Mm-hmm. Well, we spoke a little bit about the site that we were at, and mm-hmm. that was called the Tunica Cabaret
Resorts.
And we thought we were going to Tunica, which is actually a gambling town in Mississippi, just south of us. This place was actually in Memphis.
Mm-hmm. And turned out to be not a casino, but was a place where one could study the wonders of the female anatomy.
For want of a better term, it was a titty bar.
Yes, it was. And the irony of it was, we go there and our sign that we see as we're coming down the road says, topless women. And, of course, we were intrigued. And then we realized this was where we were going. They had set the thing up in the back of the club.
There's a big field behind this establishment.
Mm-hmm.
And fine people, as far as we knew. We interviewed them, talked to them.
Good interview. They were very enthusiastic and supportive of the blues scene. And
certainly the music festival that they were throwing was...
Yeah. Well done. Enjoyed it.
Yeah, above the board and, very well done. So.
And so all was well...
Until last week.
Monday, federal marshals padlocked the door to Tunica Cabaret and handed down indictments.
And another well-known establishment in town, Platinum Plus.
Platinum Plus, also another topless joint. We also refer to it as the Mount Moriah Performing Arts Center. These places were kind of singled out and all the rest are suspect. They shut them down. And this is kind of the side notes to this. Okay, it's fine. Yeah, okay, you shut a topless bar down. The guy that you guys interviewed was indicted as well. Wow. But wait, there's more. As it turns out, because in Memphis, we don't screw around. We gather the facts first. We hired Dude and his friend, paid him $38,000 to come into town and see how much he could get away with some of the more free-spirited ladies in the topless bars.
Dude is Eric Damian Kelly of Duncan Associates. Mm-hmm. Shelby County, the county that we pay our property taxes to. Mm-hmm. And our sales taxes too, gave him $38,000 to go hang out in topless bars
for a couple of days.
Yeah,
see what he could get, lap dances and what else
on a fact finding
mission for which he was consequated both financially and probably physically more than once.
This is from our local paper. It's describing the scene at Platinum Plus. It's 1 a.m. Saturday, and Platinum Plus is packed. Couples fill seats around small cocktail tables. Men file around the center stage, drinks and dollars in hand. That's 50 cents. Just a little bit, blares through the speakers of the East Memphis Strip Club. Have you ever gone to a strip club with your wife?
No, the couples are talking about there, Rick, is the girls sitting with
the dancers.
Man. Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I highlight that because, no. I've heard that married couples are actually going to strip clubs.
No.
While it's a deviation from the story, it's sort of related.
I've heard that, but never witnessed it myself in my younger days when prior to marriage, where I'd actually been in one or two of them establishments.
So despite a city ordinance banning contact and the display of, guess...
genitalia?
Yeah.
At Memphis strip clubs, nudity. Yeah.
Exotic dancers openly violated the law. Mm-hmm. Elected officials will learn. It's not the cops' fault. Police simply don't have the manpower.
No. And I believe one of the cops got a little smart alecky with them, right? And they said something about, we can spend our time in here making sure they're doing the lap dances right, or, we could go out and arrest drug dealers. And
Memphis has one of the highest murder rates per capita.
Well, there's that. Yeah.
They could be dealing with that, maybe.
They could maybe take a look at that instead of watching
the hustle and flow of the city, but...
And did you read about the other, do you have data on the other thing that I found extremely interesting? Our Memphis Finest has had undercover officers in these clubs as customers and as employees, and I'm dying to know what they did, for 2 years.
28 months or something?
Like that? Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
That's a year, 2 years and plus.
Yeah.
And it was 24 months.
How long does it take for you to figure out what's going on in the back room of the titty bar? I could have told you that in one weekend.
Those cops are so pissed that this thing broke the surface.
Oh, it's you like, know
we
it.
We had another 5 years of investigation.
You know
today,
it. Yeah? You know they're, you know, well, we better go back down there and spend another weekend or two just to make sure. And now they're good times probably been. But I doubt, I can see this thing coming to a head and then simply going away like it's done before. The only time anything has ever been done in this town regarding a strip club was in the 80s. Danny Owens, who was kind of a strip club and drug running kingpin, he was busted and he's still doing federal time. So they may choose to make an example out of our new friend, JC.
At Tunica.
And I hate to say that because the guy, if you listen to the interview, was nothing but sincere and
talking
about
business,
this is family business.
Family business. From his father, you know. And his youngest sister, I read, was running the business.
As it turned out, 17 years old, I think
when she took over,
when she took over the business. And what 17-year-old doesn't need a strip club to run?
The defense attorney said, it's a bad joke, isn't it? They've flown in some consultant from Indiana and paid him to go to strip clubs.
Man.
It does seem kind of like a bad joke to me. But
I think we need to offer up our services to go and evaluate the deplorable conditions at strip clubs in Indiana.
These women are working working hard for the money, though.
They are. Sounds like a musical cue.
It does. We do have political ties to this. Mayor A.C. Wharton's wife, Ruby, has at least $4.2 million.
Handling the business, right?
Yeah.
She was the
attorney representing Parrott's estate.
Right, which is J.C.'s daddy.
Memphis has two mayors.
Yeah.
We have our county mayor, Harrington, and our city mayor, A.C. Wharton.
Why have one when you can have two? So, well, there you go. That's all the craziness.
Well, let's talk about some of the money. In 2002, Platinum Plus generated $5.9 million in revenue.
Oh, that's some serious money, too.
That's some serious money.
Guys
are dropping their paychecks in these strip joints. Oh, this is another interesting thing. The area that we attended the concert at, once known as 61 Industrial Park, is a former toxic waste dump that had seven sewage lagoons surrounding a Vietnam-era ordnance plant.
Well, but other than that, how did you enjoy the concert?
The concert was just fine.
I enjoyed it. Maybe that kind of contributed to the ambience and all the toxic fumes and stuff leaching up out of the ground through our feet. And
that explains the trailer homes and everything else
around
that area. So, anyway, interesting story. Going after the strippers.
Yeah, well, somebody's going to do it. We are in clever musical segue. The best time to go to strip club is after midnight. So here's another J.J. Cale blues-oriented tune. Observe how the verses are repeated. Then the chorus is sung by Mr. Eric Clapton. After midnight.
Satisfaction, find out what it is all about. mission, give an exhibition. Gonna find out what it is all about. After midnight, babe, gonna let it all hang out. After midnight.
Written by J.J. Cale, performed by Mr. Eric Clapton, guitar god.
Yeah, you know, if you got to listen to somebody, Eric Clapton's not a bad choice.
Quite a bluesy guy, actually.
Extremely bluesy, and he and J.J., and the whole motivation for me playing that was they're on tour now. They're touring. J.J. Cale, noted songwriter, blues-focused. You listen to the styling, it's the 12-bar blues. And J.J. writes like a blues song with the repeats and so forth, so on. So, anyway.
So we had a nice break. We had some show snacks of cheese and crackers and sausage and stuff. Meanwhile, we finished off the Allagash Double Reserve, which has a rate beer rating of 88. And what'd you think of it?
I thought it was really good. And we were so clever in our description, we almost forgot that we actually read the marketing spludge that was there and the 7% alcohol.
I'm sure nobody got that.
No,
I'm sure
we were
just
too subtle.
We're so smooth that nobody even knew we were doing that.
But it was really good. Good beer, and they're only getting better. And I'm looking forward to our
is a wonderful brewery.
Oh man, yeah,
haven't had a bad thing yet.
And
we did some reading about the reserve, and that's they brought in the bottling lines, or the champagne. Dang it, I lost already.
Methyl champagne.
Yeah, what you said. Somewhere it's bottle conditioned beer,
but it's got a fancy name.
Yeah, and they're using corks from Belgium, so
that's what makes the flavor difference.
That's right,
the cork. It's the secret. It's the fifth ingredient in beer.
All right, so we are on our third and last beer from Allagash for the evening. Certainly not the last beer that they brew or the last Allagash we'll ever drink.
And this one, you're about to pop open. There it is. Is a limited production, right? It's Musette.
It's a Musette. It's
okay.
Ale-aged in oak barrels.
And somewhere
this particular one was bottled in May of 2006. There were 690 cases in this run. It's 10% alcohol by volume.
Yeah, 10%. Now we're talking. Now we're getting into some... Oh, man, look at the foam on that rascal. Is there any beer under that? This is like a five-finger head and a one-finger beer.
This is definitely one of those you want to tilt and pour.
Tilt the glass. So I was the crash test dummy for this. And he taught me up a little bit there. But once it's poured, it seems to maintain the head nicely. That's good. And a darker beverage. And this one, I was reading the notes on the Musette. And is that like Little Muse?
Oh, I don't know. Musette is Allagash's newest release in our Barrel Age series. The beer, inspired by the Scotch ale style, is a traditional and popular style in Belgium. Typically known as a dark and sweet strong ale, Scotch ales are rarely brewed in Scotland anymore, but still remain popular in Belgium, where they were originally thought to have been brewed for servicemen during World War I. Our interpretation of a Belgian-inspired Scotch ale, Musette, undergoes a caramelization process in the kettle, where the first runnings are condensed and caramelized, imparting a unique and subtle caramel character and amber color to the beer. Following fermentation with a Belgian strain of yeast, a portion of it is aged in oak bourbon barrels.
There it is.
They're the oak bourbon barrels again. We'll have to control ourselves in case lest we start
hurling ourselves
shots
at this the body of the Jack Daniels bottle over here.
Yeah.
Mm.
For an additional 3 months, Musette offers up raisin, ripened banana, and hints of licorice aromas. Its taste is malty and caramel with a hint of roast, and its warm finish strikes a balance between dry and caramel characters with a hint of smoke.
Now, I'm coming into this beer from having a mouthful of turkey sticks.
And smoked cheese.
And smoked cheese and honey mustard and crackers and stuff. So my first couple of hits off of it, it's starting to come through. And what you just read is probably a pretty apt description. I was kind of spooked about the raisin part because it makes me think of the raison d'etre.
Mm-hmm.
The
dogfish. Reason for existence.
Yeah, the dogfish head, mm-hmm. right? But this is not quite as pronounced a raisin flavor. But yeah, it's good. It's got some body to it. I am not getting alcohol heat at all.
Ritbeer.com gives it a 94 rating.
Well, there you go. It's good beer. Yeah, no, and I'm trying to get them all clean, clean palate. Not it's getting
fresh
it.
And so clean, clean.
Yeah, squeaky clean palate.
Who does that rap song, Fresh and Clean?
Yeah, you got me. You're the rap guy around.
Yeah, I know my son is. That's one of his favorites, though.
Okay. Of course it is. It's all about proper hygiene, right?
That's right.
Okay. So the Musette, very tasty beer. And something that I mentioned last show, I revealed much to, I knew I shouldn't have said it, about the Christmas lights, the contest. Well, we got our ass handed to us. My display of Christmas lights, and there are pictures that I'll put on the website, just so you can see I wasn't just jerking around. Put it in. We submitted it to the radio station. Man, we just knew we were doing it. We started making plans.
You were setting up chairs for the concert.
Yeah. I mean, we knew.
Because the prize.
We had this in the bag.
In case somebody didn't listen to the last episode, the prize for winning the best Christmas lights featuring the logo of this radio station was a concert in your backyard by
Shinedown.
Yeah.
So I was really, and that's my wife's probably her one of her favorite bands. It's her ringtone on her phone. So we worked. Got this thing built, over 10,000 lights, 100 something feet wide, gigantic light display. Well, there were people out here who had obviously a lot more time on their hands and a lot more help. And Trey went and checked it, and he said, they beat us. They beat us soundly.
Yeah, he said, I guess he's implying that y'all got whooped.
We did. But we're not ashamed. You know, we put up a good fight, and I got pictures to prove it. And your house is pretty impressive as well.
Well, thanks, sir.
With the giant American flag on the front.
Yeah, I've been doing that for years. So actually, some of the neighbors look forward to me putting that up.
That's good. Well,
it's American flag gun and lights. So.
Yeah, it looks good. I drove by. It's not. It's right there. It's and nice and
not to forget itself. The reason for the season. I have the Holy Family underneath it, so it's God and Country.
I didn't see that.
Oh yeah,
I was taken by the flag.
Well, look just beneath the flag, and it's the Holy Family.
Okay,
there.
I'll do that. And then I have my giant 20-something foot Christmas tree in the back.
Yes, you
made
do.
Of lights.
It looks awesome. So you created all these packages.
My presents.
Presents.
I built presents.
Frames.
I built presents to go around my tree, and the smallest one is 4 feet wide by 2.5 feet tall. The tallest one is 6.5 feet tall. And I just built the hell out of these presents. And, you know, I tried to take pictures. But in order to get the whole thing in frame, I had to go across the lake into a neighbor's backyard and shoot in order to get it. There was no way to take a picture. It's that big. So I don't know how I'm going to – I got a little video, too.
So it's not cheesy looking like the Griswolds. It's not where you have every square inch is a light bulb. It's very well placed, and, you have
lines,
your reindeers
along
out there
the lake and
your trees and such. And,
yeah, and the trailer is tastefully decorated, too. To
maybe I'll snap a shot of my house, too, and we can add it to
you
the
should.
Website.
You should. We've got our Christmas lights. Because you're driving down the street in your neighborhood, I think pretty much everybody has got their lights going out. We got a lot of lights out in Collierville, and we're all...
I know we've often joked about living in a trailer park, but we actually don't.
No.
So
it's a good place.
It's all fun.
And we got, like I said, we got the lights up. We're getting ready to kind of take a end of the year break, let's say. We got a couple of shows in the can, and so about the time you're listening to this, it's Christmas
either
time.
Either after Christmas or...
I think this will be right at week of Christmas.
Okay, Christmas is on Monday this year.
Okay, all right, so it'll be leading right up to Christmas. And, you know, all things in moderation. Enjoy yourself, enjoy good beers.
We appreciate you guys listening. It's been a great year for us. Maybe we've had a few too many beers on a show or two or occasion.
Yeah.
But it was all good fun, and hopefully you've been able to laugh with us and at us, possibly. We appreciate your listening and all the feedback that we get, both here and in the message boards that I participate in and Dick participates in, and phone calls we get from our friends and the packages and things like that.
Yeah, so we definitely appreciate the packages. There's a nice exchange of... apparently, rubs trade well for beers. It's a commodity market.
I've got a package of rubs.
That's right.
About to be shipped out tomorrow. Mm-hmm. So,
you know, we have the beer for rub option going.
Mm-hmm.
Got anything you want to send in to us, send it our way. There's some rub with your name on it waiting on you. But I guess, you know, to sum it up, thanks for listening. Merry Christmas. Happy New Year.
Hope you had a good 2006, and I hope you have a fantastic 2007.
See you next time.
Drive safe.
I want a hippopotamus for Christmas. Only a hippopotamus will do. Don't want a doll, no dinky tinker toy. I want a hippopotamus to play with and enjoy. I want a hippopotamus for Christmas. I don't think Santa Claus will mind you. He won't have to use a dirty chimney flue. Just bring him through the front door, that's the easy thing to do. I can see me now on Christmas morning creeping down the stairs. Oh, what joy and what surprise when I open up my eyes to see a hippo hero standing there. I want a hippopotamus for Christmas. Only a hippopotamus will do. No crocodile, no rhinoceroses. I only like hippopotamuses, and hippopotamuses like me too. The hippo is a vegetarian. There's lots of room for him in our two-car garage. I'd feed him there and wash him there and give him his massage. I can see me now on Christmas morning creeping down the stairs. Oh, what joy and what surprise when I open up my eyes to see a hippo hero standing there. I want a hippopotamus for Christmas. Only a hippopotamus will do. No crocodile or rhinoceroses. I only like hippopotamuses and hippopotamuses.